Before we start this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including the Stitcher Radio app for your mobile device, iTunes, our website air-raid.net, and of course at www.cairoradio.com. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 258, what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Boom, indeed, folks. We've got a great show planned for you this week. Andrew W.K. will be joining us here momentarily. Great, great conversation with Mr. WK this week. Got a little intense, man. A little intense in the second half there. And I think you guys are really, really going to enjoy it. By the way, thank you so much for all the positive feedback for last week's episode with Jurassic 5. It was great. We had a great conversation with Soup of the band. Unfortunately, I totally forgot that we were going on vacation. And I was unable to go to the show, and that's why we had recorded it ahead of time. But, man, nonetheless, such a great episode, so thank you all for taking the chance to listen to that. And, of course, if you're just tuning in, you're to the Air Raid Podcast for the first time, you can go to air-raid.net, find all of our archived episodes, all 258 episodes right there for your listening pleasure, with people like Mike McCready of Pearl Jam, Judah Friedlander from Wet Hot American Summer. By the way, oh my God, have you seen the trailer for the new Wet Hot American Summer series that's coming out on Netflix? Judah Friedlander looks awesome in it, and yeah, it's going to be a good one, folks. It's going to be a good one. So go back and listen to that chat with Judah. He has some insight on the new and improved Wet Hot American Summer. Also, what else we got up there? Aisha Tyler, Mike Birbiglia, Bob Saget, Jim Brewer, all sorts of stuff right there for your listening pleasure at air-raid.net. All right? Okay. I am on vacation right now. I'm sitting on the deck high above Flathead Lake here in Montana in this beautiful, serene setting. I mean, it's just gorgeous. It's just gorgeous. I've only been here for about 3 days. Is this the third day? I've lost track already, man. I've lost track. It's amazing. Oh my God, I've got this, I've got my whole mobile setup just set up on this, this picnic table out on the deck. I think there's somebody that's paddleboarding out there in the middle of the lake. Just seems like a bad idea. Be far out there. It's a huge lake. And, it's just the water just feels so rejuvenating and cleansing. It's so clean over here, man, and I just love it. I just absolutely love it. I don't want to leave, but we've got to, because we've got some big things coming up for the rest of the week. If you live here around Washington, you can see me at the Timber Music Festival later this week. Are you guys coming to Timber? It's going to be amazing. It's going to be absolutely amazing. Let's see here, guys. Can you hear my child whining in the background? I hope you can. July 16th through the 18th, Timber Music Festival. And it's, oh my God, man. Just listen to this, lineup. The Dead Milkmen, Beat Connection, La Luz, David Bazan, Taco Cat, John, Josiah, and Charity from Head and the Heart, Shaprice, Tomo Nakayama, Grace Love and the True Loves, Lonesome Shack, Gibraltar, the Hoot Hoots, Naked Giants, Evening Bell, Talkative, Bigfoot Wallace and His Wicked Sons, Tom Eddy. Oh my God, man. Ah, oh, this is going to be so much fun. And they got a comedy there this year as well. And of course, me, Aaron, your favorite podcaster, is going to be up there on the main stage introducing people. And I'm really going to try this year to not get drunk and make fun of any of the acts while I'm up there on stage, okay? So that's my, yes, I am going to try to accomplish that. Oh my God, can you hear this? Can you hear what I'm hearing right now? I don't know if you could hear that, but there's birds chirping. The hot tub that I'm sitting next to is bubbling. And I am just loving life right now, folks. I am just loving life. Okay, let's get into it, shall we? Andrew W.K., man. I went into this interview with the mindset that I didn't want to talk about partying. I didn't want to talk about his philosophy on partying. He's talked about that with many, many, many folks. And I wanted to steer clear of that. I wanted to talk about his life, how he became who he is today. I think we really achieved that. And it, man, it gets serious the second half. Did I already say that? It gets serious in the second half of the show. Gets a little dark, man. But it's great. It's great to get some insight on this guy's life. I think, you know, he's very busy. He's a very busy man, and he gets stretched thin. And I think you can hear that a little bit what he talks about. But very interesting story, very interesting life story. And by the way, Wikipedia, God damn it, man. I got to quit going to Wikipedia to do research because, geez, it really, there's a lot of stuff that is not true. Okay? AndrewWK.com, go to /tour to find out where he's going to be. And let's see, let's do this. Let's go to our first musical break, and we'll be right back with more The Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest Andrew W.K. this week's episode. This song's called Party Hard. Stay with us. Be back in a moment. Like you come down to Seattle, you get out of the car, you've got four beautiful women that want to show you little puppy dogs, and then take pictures of you with the puppy dogs, and then you have a podcaster that just wants to talk to you in your green room before your show. It's got to be tiring.
Well, no, those instances that you just listed, those I don't find tiring at all. We've actually been here since yesterday.
Oh, you have?
So we didn't just arrive. But even had we just gotten here, it would have been still not what I would consider tiring. Tiring things are more, I would, for me at least, physical sort of, extreme exertions of physical energy. So, you know, running great distances.
Do you do that?
I used to run more. I don't really enjoy running so much these days. Playing shows, you know, is more physically demanding for sure than doing an interview. And while traveling can take a long time, it's usually a lot of resting sort of while you're doing it. I mean, flying, I don't find that particularly tiring. Even if it takes sort of a lot of time, you're usually sitting, you know, you might even doze off. So, no, I'm not tired now. There have been times when I've been physically tired, but not any time in the last, I don't know.
2 hours.
No, like 3 days or so. I haven't been tired in the last 3 days, which is good. I'm very thankful for that. That's always the goal, is to actually never be tired.
Sure.
If you play your cards right and you keep your adrenaline going, you can usually maintain that. And then even when you do rest, you rest in a way that it's not due to tiredness, but just due to wanting rest, you know. So rest in itself can actually be tiring if you overrest.
That's true. I've had that happen.
Yeah,
yesterday.
Okay, well, you really do know firsthand. It can
exactly.
be very, getting too much sleep, of course, can wear you out as well.
Yeah. Andrew WK joining me here. We're down in the basement of Barboza, which is, or Numo's, I should say, which is swelteringly hot. And I apologize, because you gotta stay down here.
Well, actually, no. I don't find it that warm either.
No.
Well, I guess I was prepared for something much warmer based on what some other folks had said in similar ways.
Yeah. Well, see, you're probably hearing that from like local Seattle people, right?
Yes.
Like this is hot
correct.
For local Seattle people.
Okay.
You live in New York, right?
Well, I guess anywhere we've gone that's under 100 degrees, I don't consider really hot.
Sure. Sure.
But you're right. Considering it is a lower level in a basement, you might expect it to be a bit cooler than this, I suppose. it's a bit humid. Maybe that's adding to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, Andrew, where did music start for you, man? Like, what was the catalyst in your life?
I took piano lessons from an early age. That was the first musical instrument I ever really engaged with in any way. My dad was taking piano lessons himself, so seeing him at that age, I don't know, 2-3 years old, definitely are very interested in whatever your parents are doing or what anyone's doing that's around you. And he mm-hmm. was around me a great deal. And it's a very interesting looking apparatus, this big box with these black and white keys. So I was very drawn to it and was very lucky to be able to take lessons from around age 5 until, I guess up until very recently. So it's always good to keep taking lessons, even if you've been playing for a long time, and that's how I got into music.
Yeah. So it was the parents.
Yes. Well, they encouraged.
And it wasn't a push.
It. No, not really. I think again, your parents sort of see what you're interested in. They weren't themselves musicians in a traditional sense, to a degree that would have wanted or encouraged them to make me follow in their footsteps.
Uh huh.
So, no, it was more just sort
I thought
of,
that I read that your mom was a violinist.
No.
No?
No, I don't believe she's ever played any instrument. She may have in school, in high school or something like that. I should actually ask her about that.
This is the problem with reading Wikipedia pages.
Is that on Wikipedia?
That is on Wikipedia, my friend.
Jeez. Well,
your mother is a professional violinist.
Okay, well, I will I'll try to look into that. I mean, that's the thing about those web pages is they can usually be altered very
oh,
easily.
Oh, yeah.
But that's good.
Indeed.
I mean, that's what allows me to correct that. I do actually think I remember seeing that information up somewhere. But no, she's not a professional violinist, although that would be great if she was. But she was very encouraging and always supported me in wanting to get into music. I think for a lot of young people, music is a very natural inclination. And I've certainly met more people who wanted to get into music who were not allowed to.
Sure.
Then I've met people who didn't want to do music and were forced to. I've actually never met anyone who didn't want to do music and was forced to. It was either a combination of mutual excitement in the whole family, or far too often they really wanted to do music and were told they were not allowed to do it. So
right,
I was lucky
right.
just that my parents said, okay, if you find that interesting, go for it.
Yeah. Yeah, man. And so it all started with piano then.
Yes, piano lessons.
Yeah,
yep. Just very traditional.
What were you basic. What were you listening to as a young kid? What were the influences?
Well, the influence is probably where the other piano teachers, or some of the other students. We had group lessons, so there were always older kids who had been taking lessons even just a couple more years that would have radically advanced abilities compared to myself and the other younger students. And that was always, in one way very intimidating, mm-hmm. and in another way very inspiring. It was hard to imagine or even believe that you could go from where we were and then in 3 years later be at this level of these, 10-year-olds or 12-year-olds. But sure enough, next thing you knew, 3-4 years down the road, you were that much better. And it was always having those teachers that were much older than us, of course. We had a variety of teachers, actually. This whole piano program was graduate piano students teaching children as part of their graduate program studies.
Right, right.
So you were benefiting from being a student of a student, and the enthusiasm that they had, considering they were students, really was palpable. Versus, maybe a piano teacher that was doing it professionally or someone who was much, much older and been doing it for a long, long time.
Right, right.
These students were in the throes of their own extremely intense relationship with piano. Very high stress, very high expectations for them, getting whatever they were getting, some kind of master's degree in music. And I didn't really understand that at the time, I guess just by how young I was. But now looking back, it was huge to be around that type of enthusiasm for anything, really, let
right,
alone music.
Because you don't have like an authority figure kind of looming over you.
Yeah, it was
right?
More of a partner.
Yeah.
More someone who was going through it with you in their own way, certainly at a much, much higher level. But nothing really was more influential than seeing my teachers play their own pieces that they were working on and seeing them mess up or struggle with a part and seeing them practice and seeing them dedicate themselves to this because they wanted to,
sure.
even though it was hard. So all of that was very powerful. And I actually didn't really have a lot of other older kids around, just the way our neighborhood was set up.
Where'd you grow up?
This is in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Yeah.
It's in southeast Michigan, about, like half hour outside of Detroit. It's where the University of Michigan is based.
Uh-huh.
And a very dynamic area, great history of, radical culture there and all kinds of stuff. And they have a good music school. They really do. So
what did your dad do for a job?
He teaches at the University of Michigan as a law professor.
Oh, really?
Of property law and contract law and environmental law.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So, how
was it growing up in that? I mean, it sounds like he was very, your parents were very easygoing and kind of, would not push you in a certain direction, of course, and would just let you kind of figure out what you wanted to do.
To a degree. Yeah, I mean, it was a good balance of both. I think I was very lucky just to have a nice bit of both. There was structure and rigor.
Yeah.
But there was also, encouragement and support and open-mindedness and also a bit of a detachment, too. There was, a great presence, and there was also sort of room to be alone.
Uh-huh. Because of what? Because of, like,
well, they weren't overbearing, I guess, yeah.
Yeah?
Well, no, meaning that they just weren't too... I've had some friends whose parents were just sort of almost like their friend.
Right.
More than a dad. They
yeah.
were sort of like
yeah.
an older brother.
Uh-huh.
And there's nothing wrong with that. But they didn't have a lot of their own space in that situation. There was a lot of hanging out. And I'm very thankful that there was a bit of distance where you could have your own world that didn't involve your parents as well.
Sure, sure. Yeah. So when did kind of this playing piano kind of morph into, coming into your own and finding, because every teenager has their experience of where they really find their niche, right? Especially musical kids. When did you find that niche?
Well, I was very lucky to be exposed to all kinds of other music after those piano lessons, sort of picking up the slack from maybe not being exposed or having access to a lot of other things in those earlier days.
Uh-huh.
Then there was just sort of a deluge of different things that I'd never even known could exist, all kinds of crazy sounds and scenes and styles, and I was really drawn to the most intense of those. So stuff that didn't even really sound like music, and
just noise rock. Is that what you're referring to?
It was just sounds. I mean, I don't know that I was even. It wasn't noise because it wasn't, unpleasant to listen. Uh-huh. I mean, it was something that you wanted to hear.
Sure.
But it wasn't really rock music. It was, I mean, it wasn't played on guitar, bass, or drums or things like that. So it was more just, I don't really know how people made a lot of this stuff, to be honest. I mean, some kind of machine or electronic apparatus or something, some kind of instrument, I guess. But,
Give me an example. Like, who were you listening to?
Let's see. I mean,
like a Sonic Youth or
A lot of my friends, I'm certainly familiar with that group.
Yeah.
I didn't listen to them specifically, but I was aware of their work. They were very, very popular with some of the other people in my high school.
Uh-huh.
It's either t-shirts a lot, always had great t-shirt designs.
Yes, they did.
For sure, still do. No, I don't know. I guess it would be called like, contemporary classical, things like that, that style of music. But it wasn't so much the particular music as it was the sensibility.
Uh-huh.
That you could do things that didn't necessarily make sense and that didn't have to fit into anything. And that, in fact, not having it make sense was the most exciting thing about it. That you could sort of blow your own mind and get into that as a style unto itself. And it didn't have to make sense. You didn't have to be able to explain it. I can't even really explain it now, for better or worse. But it was a whole new way of looking at the world, that this was a feeling that you could actually not hold on to or grasp, but uh-huh. go after. And that it could, become your whole way of life, that trying to stay in that sort of chaotic, finding a way to be almost at peace within that kind of confusing, confounding mindset. That's what kind of became my main interest, I guess, through those high school years, like you're asking.
Yeah.
And then I just decided not to really do that personally. Like, I wasn't meant to do that with my own work, and just went back into the keyboard and said, I'll try to just make the most exciting keyboard-based music as I can, rock music.
Yeah. So you just started producing your own stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'd always played music, my own music. I was in bands always, too, and it was never really thought of as a career or a project, really. It was sort of what uh-huh. you just did. Like, you might ride your bike downtown and go play pinball, or you might record a song or something. It was just sort of, or like draw a picture. It was activity. It was play. It was playing.
Right, right.
I was talking to my old friend the other day who, when we would get together to hang out, we wouldn't even make a plan of, okay, we're going to record a song or, start a band or something. We would just make songs because that's kind of what it was, the most fun thing we could think to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, when I hadn't ever been able to sort of sum that up into a particular thing until the other day, I realized we were just playing, like with building blocks or with, going down and splashing around in an old swimming hole or, even just sitting in a parking lot and telling jokes. This was play. It was a way of spending time together that helped you figure out about life by actively doing something. And in our case, it was oftentimes, recording or making music. But it was never to an end other than to the end in itself. It was,
sure.
It wasn't trying to achieve anything. We had no ambitions or aspirations. Sometimes I feel like we should have now looking back, but we just did it because it was entertaining to keep ourselves occupied.
Yeah, yeah. Now, was it a thing? Did it have to have anything to do with like just growing up where you were growing up? Like, did you feel like an outsider when you were a kid?
No, not
the
really.
The place you were at?
Not in a bad way.
No.
No, because I think only I would have felt like an outsider if somehow I was discouraged from those interests. I liked being on my own.
Uh-huh.
A lot of times, and it didn't really bother me that I wasn't part of other larger groups of other kids, because I didn't really like those kids that much anyway. So why would I want to be part of their group? They weren't very nice a lot
That's
of times.
That's great. I love that.
Well, I'm glad I was able to see it at that time that
way. Well, yeah, too. Totally, because a lot of kids aren't, including myself.
Well, I've seen both sides of it, because there's been times when I wasn't able to escape it as easily. And uh-huh. then I remember wanting to, there was this one extremely mean kid, really just I don't want to say it was a bad seed, but if there ever was something like that where this guy is just sadistic. And I was talking to another friend of mine about him back then, you know, in high school, and saying, what can we say to him to get him to stop being so mean? I said, what if I just said to him, you're very mean? They said, oh, he would beat you up. He would punch you right away for saying that. I said, but clearly he knows that he's being mean. How could he be insulted by someone pointing that out to him? Like, no, you shouldn't say that. It would get him really angry. I thought, well, what if I said, like, why, you know, you're so unfriendly or something? But, you know, you just sort of keep your distance from that.
Yeah. Did you do it?
Yeah, I was, for some reason, I was able to keep my distance and they would leave me alone. I don't know why. I think there was some understanding that this guy, you know, just let him be. And that was good because I was very self-entertained and able to occupy myself and had enough friends, you know, to do whatever. I have no bad feelings about those.
Well, times. Were you always, I mean, did it have anything to do with your size?
No,
Were you like a built kid?
Not particularly. No? There's always many bigger kids. Well, when, you know, if you're 8 years old and someone else is 11, I mean, yeah, I wasn't like, I had a friend. I did have a couple friends that looked about, you know, 6 to 8 years older. So that when we were 11, he could pass
for
18.
That's a huge range.
One of these guys had a beard when he was 12. I'm not exaggerating. And we took advantage of that. He would go and buy things for us that, you know, someone that wasn't looking like that couldn't have bought.
How's he doing now, by the way?
He's doing very well. He looks almost exactly the same. Okay. You know, he's aging very well because he looked like he was 20 when he was 10. And now he's, you know, 35 and looks like he's 20. So that's the way to do it. You know, look old early and then you age very well because everyone says, oh, you still look really old and now you actually are.
That's true. Well, let's do this. Andrew, let's go to our second musical break and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Andrew W.K. Be right back. First time, walk me through the first time you got up on stage and actually played music for people.
Oh, well, that would have been those piano recitals.
Yeah.
You know, as boring as it may be, just going back, that was all those first musical experiences all connect to that.
Nerve-wracking experience?
You know, extremely, extremely nerve-wracking, extraordinarily unpleasant. I would dread it for months and months and months leading up. Every year there was these yearly recitals. There were also these big tests, aptitude tests for your piano training. And
sure.
Both of those were, I can't even really compare it to anything else. And in that way, of course, it was a great experience to go through it every year, because nothing has really ever been as bad as that was. Uh-huh. Even the most frightening experience, I could always draw upon having made it through those piano recitals and say, well, I did that, so I can do this now, whatever it may be. It was sort of a kind of out-of-body experience where the stress and trauma is so severe that you kind of aren't even there. But, of course, you have to in order to play. So, it really pushed you to your limits, and that was probably the most beneficial training out of any of it. I mean, you can learn scales at home, and you can really do a lot of the musical side of practice on your own. But that stage time and the pressure and fear involved with that, I don't think I would have been able to get really any other way.
Do you feel that still to this day? Like, do you struggle with that kind of thing?
Not in a way that's detrimental.
Yeah.
But maybe in a way that helps focus and concentrate. It's much different now because the way I perform is the way that I want to play, and the songs
that I
want to play, and an atmosphere that's people wanting to see you play, and they're not so much there to judge you or scold you or criticize you or things like that, but more to kind of cheer along with you in enjoying this shared thing. With those recitals, it's much more like a test. And there's a sense that you might not make it, like a tightrope walk. With the concert, I feel like it's a tightrope walk where there's a trampoline of people immediately underneath you or almost kind of walking along with you, sharing that. But, of course, it's always a bit nerve-wracking in the best way. That's how you can tell that you care about it. I've had shows where I
That's a good point.
Didn't feel like that, and they probably weren't very good shows. You know?
Nonsense.
I've definitely played some very, very poor quality shows. And
have you?
Absolutely. And they're some of the things I'm most ashamed of in my adult life, for sure.
Yeah.
And those experiences are what allow you to say, well, I will never allow that to happen again. And you really, you can fathom those things and picture them to some degree by imagining what that would be like. But then actually doing it, that's the only way you can really get that experience under your belt. So that it allows you to never repeat it.
Right, right. Yeah. That's a good point, man. Now, like when things first started kind of taking off for you, I mean, it sounds like, you've lived this life, you had this young life of like playing music and just kind of figuring it out for yourself and enjoying the hell out of it, you know, with your friends. And did it seem like it was all leading up to something? You know, that's very a very cliched way to look at, you know, somebody's life. It's a very like kind of like movie trope, but I mean, it almost seems like what we've been talking about tonight has just been kind of all leading to, you know, what you do now.
It was leading. I wasn't aware of it at the time. I never imagined that I would end up doing any of the stuff that I'm doing now at all. Really, I imagined, in very vague, abstract terms, of doing something.
Right.
But
there was a dream there.
There was the dream of having a dream, I think, more.
Okay.
Of wanting to do something that was big or exciting. And I had a lot of very specific dreams that ended up, you know, collapsing usually within one day or 2 days upon trying them. Or just sort of, it was very obvious that I wasn't supposed to do that.
Yeah.
And there was, just this kind of undeniable clarity that I was supposed to do a very specific thing, kind of whether I wanted to or not, which was a relief in a way and very gratifying in one sense, but also very sort of disappointing in another way and kind of underwhelming in another way.
How so?
Well, because before I used to think that I was in charge of everything and that I decided what my life was going to be and that you take control of your destiny and you do what you want. And I tried doing that or would convince myself that's what I was doing a lot of the time. But then if I was stronger and could look more honestly at the situation and at myself and, you know, just circumstances in the world and all the other factors at play and whatever was happening and force myself to stop being so self-deceitful, then I could see, wow, well, this is actually something that's really very far out of your immediate control and you could never take full responsibility for any of this because there's been too many other factors involved. And
are you talking about like a corporate interest or are you talking about like a fate?
I guess fate.
Yeah.
A fate that involves forces outside of your immediate grasp. And that's,
sure.
That is it's a strange thing to admit at a certain point, because it takes away your power, but you do have the power to give in to it or to fight it. And so I just gave in rather than fought against it. And it fortunately I enjoy doing it very, very, very much. It's just it's a slight difference when you realize that you're not in control of everything. It's silly when I look back to think that I ever could have been, but it made me feel more proud. It made me feel more strong and smart and important and different and special and all these things when I used to think that I was in control of everything.
Yeah.
And that I was the one making all these things happen and nothing else and no one else was. But you know what? The way I realized that wasn't the case was just simply realizing all the other people that had contributed to what I was doing.
Sure.
Had nothing to do with me and did it on their own. So that right there eliminated this I did everything, you know, even though that was, again, very thrilling and emotionally gratifying to think at times, especially when I was feeling, you know, frustrated or you know, discouraged, I could sort of turn to the sense that I'm in charge. But I knew that that was kind of a cop-out to think that way.
And well, that's a very self-defeatist way to look at it, though, man. You've accomplished a ton.
Well, this has
much more than you
I've
know,
I've been
many
in the midst
people.
Of well, that's very kind of you to say and very gracious, but
yeah.
I've been in, they're very generous. I've been in the midst of accomplishments that involve many, many other people. And then, again, many other factors that are hard to even put on any individual that are sort of intangible, what you might just call good luck, good fortune, things coming together, working out in very bizarre ways. I think I was present. I take responsibility for being there to help do what I was supposed to do as part of it. But, you know, it's like trying to say that, you know, the mayor of a city is responsible for that city. That's couldn't be further from the case. It's exactly the opposite. In fact, they're probably one of the least important aspects to what that city is doing every day. It's all these other forces
sure,
at work.
Sure.
And the greatest mayor would probably...
There's a lot of things that go on,
that go
into it. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And maybe a better mayor, when I was trying to think, like, how can I be a better person, the better mayor would realize that and start operating from that point of view rather than the point of view that they're the puppet master. You know, there's a bigger puppet master always, depending how far you zoom out. And if you can try to allow them to be the puppet master and move you and be a good puppet, that to me is a better fulfillment than pretending that I'm the puppet master, you know?
Well, here's my two cents. I think you need to realize that you are the puppet master. Whether it was that way in the past or if it's that way in the present, you need to realize that you're the puppet master, man. You're in control
okay,
now,
if
dude.
You say so.
It's there. Dude.
Well, I went through that and thought that for a long time, and then I doubled back on it. So maybe I'll doubt my doubt now, and I'll go back to the original way of thinking. I mean, if I'm trying to feel very, you know, high and mighty and like I can puff my chest, then I'll think that way. And I appreciate you, you know, encouraging me to do so. I found it to be a more fulfilling way to realize the complexity of these
Well,
things,
sure. I mean,
know?
it's a complex business, man.
Yeah, like,
it's,
being alive
there's a lot
is
of ins
very,
and outs.
Very,
you know,
very complicated.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. So, are you happy? Are you happy with where you're at now?
Oh well, very happy in some
ways.
You sound,
ways. You like sound very humble.
I'm very thankful. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I can't believe that I've gotten to do any of this. I can't believe that it's continued on this long. That there's still more unfolding. I can definitely tell that it's developing. I don't know exactly in what way.
Mm-hmm.
but I feel more astounded and, you know, just almost perplexed, not puzzled, but yeah. but just on the border of
sure
of astounded that any of this has happened at all. And it's been the best of times, it's been the worst of times, and I wouldn't have had it any other way, you know, and it's continued yeah. on like yeah. that. So I try to do a good job at what I have to do at that moment, and try to always decrease the rate of failure. Sometimes, you know, it's at its best, it's been around a 10% rate of failure. At its worst, it's been, I'd say, upwards of 92, 93% rate of failure. And those were dark, dark times. That was, yeah. you know, but hey, I'll never, again, as I'm saying, I'll never go back to that having been there. Because if you get 100% rate of failure, then you don't exist anymore, at least not on this plane.
So that's true.
I'm trying that's to squeeze true. It down. My goal would be to get in the, you know, 100% rate of success as a human, you know?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
that's most people don't ever reach that. That's,
Andrew?
You got to shoot for it.
Andrew, you're on your way.
Well, I appreciate your encouragement.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me, man.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate
thank,
it.
Thank you for yeah. the excellent questions.
It's
good
been
conversation.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. All right.
It was a good chat, right?
Man, what a cool dude. Couldn't have been a nicer fella. Let me tell ya. It almost rhymed. Yeah, Andrew WK, man. Nice, nice dude. If you would like to see Andrew, he is on tour currently. And let's see, you can go to, once again, andrewwk.com/tour to find out where he's going to be. July 18th, Lorain, Ohio at Roverfest. August 9th, Montreal, Canada at Parc Jean Drapeau. August 14th, Somerville, Massachusetts at Cuisine en Locale. I don't even know how I said that. All right. August 15th, Patchogue, New York. August 28th, Denver, Colorado, and on from there. Go to andrewwk.com, find out more. Ah, great episode. Great episode. We got a lot of stuff coming up, man. Come to Timberfest. Join me at Timberfest, won't you? July 16th through the 18th, right there in Carnation, Washington. I'll be bringing some fantastic acts up on stage all weekend. So join me, will you? All right. You can subscribe to the Air Raid podcast on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. It really helps out in the long run and only takes a couple seconds. We're available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Cairo Radio, and now the Spreaker apps. So you can find us anywhere on your mobile device. Or just visit air-raid.net to subscribe directly to our RSS feed. You can also find all the archived episodes right there for your listening pleasure. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/TheAirRaid Podcast. Our Twitter handle is @AirRaidNet. You can follow us there or email me directly, aaron@air-raid.net, if you've got something to say. Like listener Blake, who recently emailed in and said, hey, can you work on the sound quality when you go to these venues and interview people, like we just did with Andrew WK? And there is nothing I can do about that. All right? So sorry about that, Blake. Remember to take the pledge. Take the pledge to tell somebody about this here show. Tell your friends, your mother, your sister, your brother. We'll even take your cousins. How about your dad? Tell your dad. Sign somebody up. Subscribe them to the show while they're not looking. Bring us up in conversation. That's how word gets out, folks. All right. Right? Yes. Okay. Here is your inspirational quote of the week as said by a four-year-old.
Partying is the hardest, easy thing you can do.
All right, folks. Thank you so much for listening. We're going to close this episode with another Andrew WK track. It's called We Want Fun. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back next week. Have a good one, everybody.